Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division III Podcast. I'm Zach Babbo. Today I'm going to be talking with Stevenson head coach Paul Cantabene. Currently his Mustangs sit at number one in the country. Cantabene is entering his ninth season at the helm of Stevenson, where he's accrued 115-35 overall record. He was the second fastest coach in Division III history to reach the 100-win plateau. He's made five CAC championship appearances, winning the title in 2010, and four Division III tournament appearances. He's produced 20 All-CAC players and 32 All-America selections. Prior to Stevenson, Cantabene was an assistant at Maryland, Towson, and Hopkins, where he coached under such greats as Dave Cottle and Tony Seaman. Cantabene is a 1993 graduate of Loyola, where he played lacrosse and is still considered potentially the greatest faceoff man to ever play the game. He did stints in the NLL and MLL and is a 2003 inductee to the Rochester chapter of the U.S. Lacrosse Hall of Fame.
Okay, well, we're here with Stevenson coach Paul Cantabene. Coach, you're entering your ninth year at the helm of Stevenson. You guys have been, you've built this into a perennially consistent competitive program, national championship aspirations. This is your first year you guys came into the season with the number one ranking. Just kind of curious, I mean, you know, I know coaches try not to pay much attention to a lot of that stuff, but did you have any kind of initial reactions on that, on you know, just seeing you guys sitting up top?
Well, when you build a program, I think, you know, as we've always done here, you know, you got to celebrate first, you know, and obviously that's the first time we've been preseason ranked number one by your magazine. We think that's a great accomplishment for our program. I think it shows you how far we've come from a program that nobody even knew about or thought about to somebody that, you know, gives a lot of credence to that number one ranking. So I think it's a great honor for us. And yeah, but in the end of the day, you know, I think our guys are happy to have it. It's a great thing. We get great publicity out of it, but now we got to win some games. So, but it's a great thing. We're happy about it, and you know, I know our president likes it. So,
can you talk about this year's team? Last year, some people were kind of surprised that you had such a strong record, and you know, you go 18-5, and you wind up making it all the way to the semifinals. You know, after such a big graduating class in 2011.
Yeah, well, you know, we graduated probably one of the best classes, maybe the history of Division III, the year before last year coming in, and so we had a lot of young guys coming in, and I thought they did a great job. You know, they really kind of, we emphasized, you know, you have to match with the level of play the other guys before you set, and I think they did a great job of living up to that, understanding the legacy they left behind and making it better, and they played well. You know, we had to figure ourselves out early in the year about offensively to score some goals, and we figured that out, and our defense carried us for a while, but then in the end, you know, we were averaging, you know, 13, 14 goals a game. We're giving ourselves a chance to win and found a style of play, and we got a lot of those guys back this year, and I think it's really translated into us scoring some more easy goals. You know, against our first game against Nazareth, we got a lot of easy goals where a year ago we'd have to call a lot of plays to get goals. This year, these guys understand the offense a little bit better, and so that's really helped out. But, you know, getting that record last year, I think, was really credit to how tough these guys are mentally, understanding what you have to do to win games. You know, it's not easy to come out on every Wednesday and Saturday and win. They think they understood what to do and got better each game, and I think that showed by the end of the year. Because at the end of the year, you know, Salisbury won the championship, but we only lost to them three times by eight goals. You know, we played them tougher than anybody and probably should have won one or two of those games in the end if we were just a little older and understood how to handle some situations better.
You know, along those lines, I guess, how was maybe this year's offseason a little different than last year? Because, you know, last year you were really trying to rebuild a lot, whereas this year, you know, you had a lot of the pieces back, so maybe you could jump into some more advanced
things. It's a little bit easier to get install. Kids know what they were doing, you know, put offenses in, do some things a lot easier when you know what's going on. When you get older guys, they're telling the younger guys what to do. When you have all young guys, nobody's there to teach them. So this year, the guys were teaching each other, teaching the younger guys what to do. So everything flowed better. The drills flowed better. How we installed things flowed better. You know, things happened a little bit, clicked a little bit better. Guys working with each other a little bit better because they know each other now, whereas freshmen, they're just getting to know each other. Now they know each other's mental capacity, know each other how they're feeling, or this guy's down, or this guy, what he needs to do to get better. So all that worked a little bit easier, and it's easier to actually run a practice when everybody's kind of on the same page.
You mentioned, you know, you guys lost to Salisbury here's national championship last year three times. Kind of one of the bigger pieces of news maybe around the Stevenson program this year is the conference move from the CAC to the MAC. And in so doing, you guys keep Salisbury on the schedule, but now it's an out-of-conference game, an in-conference game. game, and obviously there won't be the likelihood of how in the past couple of years there's been almost that two-week period where you guys will play each other in
maybe three times,
you know, between CAC playoffs, regular season, and NCAA tournament. We will get into the overall conference change, but just how is maybe that dynamic of that that's easily become the most notable rivalry, I would say, in Division III, at least for the past 5 years.
Yeah, it's been a great game. You know, I've really been happy the way it, I think it's helped Division III lacrosse to have a big game like that each year. And I mean, we had Division I coaches come up to me over the summer and go, those are some of the best games I see all year because you guys just play so hard against each other. And I think it's a great game. And I think this year it will lose a little bit of its maybe luster just a little bit because beforehand when we played each other, it was always for the top seed in the conference. Then it was to go to an NCAA tournament, and then it was to go to like a final championship game. But this year, it's not as much a riding on the line when we play each other. Obviously, regional rankings and everything will be on the line, but it'll still be a huge game for us and for them. But it won't have as much implications towards conference standings or conference championships as it did in the past. So we're committed to the game. It won't be Stevenson's fault if we don't play anymore. You know, hopefully Salisbury has that same mentality. They want to keep the game because we think it's one of the best games in college across at any level, and we just love the way the two teams battle each other in that game. You know, it really makes it a lot of fun.
You keep a very competitive out of conference schedule. How has, you know, can you talk about how that's been a priority, maybe how you've used that to help build the program overall?
Yeah, I mean, I think the scheduling's really worked really well for us. You know, we've done a great job with it, and, you know, I think kids want to play good teams when they come to college. You know, you can win 20-1 all you want, but it doesn't get your team better. It doesn't make you, it doesn't improve you. Kids want to play the best, and that's been our kind of mentality. You know, we're lucky enough, you know, Lynchburg is one of the first teams to schedule us. That was really good, you know, to do that, and then we're able to add Washington College for a year or two and play them, and then we're able to add on the other schools that we play. Tufts wanted to come down, which was great. Now we get RIT on the schedule. We play Denison. You know, we got Roanoke. You know, we play all these. Winnick, Western New England's a top-ranked team. And, you know, we love playing these teams week in and week out. And I think starting next week, you know, we play three top 15 teams in 10 days. You know, then we play Goucher, who might be ranked at that time. And then we jump back into it with Tufts. You know, we love playing those tough games. I think that's the mentality as a coach you want your kids to have. Hey, we got to get ready to play every day because the reason we really schedule all those tough teams because you don't want to have a time where you can't turn it on. So our players always got to be in that mentality. You always got to have it get turned on to play great because in the NCAA tournament, you take a day off, you go home. And I think we've done a good job getting three of the last four Final Fours because we never take a day off. So that's the mentality we kind of push, and that follows through in our scheduling. And even next year, it gets even harder because we play Cabrini on the schedule in 2014. And so I think if we did the rankings that you did your preseason rankings this year, our first seven games would be against the top eight teams in the country. So we like that mentality.
You know, one of the things that's kind of jumped out to a lot of these great non-conference rivalries you've built is the fact that they've been entertaining games to watch. I mean, the Salisbury game is an entertaining game to watch. Seeing you guys play Tufts is an entertaining game. I think a year ago, you and Tufts combined for like 130 shots.
Yeah, it's a crazy number.
That. And you've always been good with candid quotes. I remember catching you at the USILA convention, and you kind of said that the pace of play was a Division I problem. It wasn't a Division III problem.
Right.
Obviously, the new rules, pace have been, you know, at the tip of the zeitgeist in lacrosse the past year. Have you kind of developed any thoughts on the new rules, or have you seen them into Division
III? Yeah, I think the rules are great. I mean, I don't think it's going to affect a lot of the top 20 Division III teams because I think they already play fast. You know, they want to get out and get out going and stuff. I think it's going to affect some maybe the lower teams a little bit as they get used to it, the fast pace, getting up and down because they're not used to playing that style. But I think the biggest adjustment is for the officials. I think the officials have so much more to worry about now, so many more little calls, especially with the shot clock, so many more of these little things, and it's really kind of taken their priority away from just calling fouls. So I think early on, the officials just got to figure out the game. I think the players are going to pick it up no matter what. You know, I think they're going to pick it up quick. Our guys have picked it up just like that. You know, we push the pace, but I think the biggest thing along with the rules is that it's tougher to play more people. You know, you thought the first thing when you got rules, you're going to get up and down, you got to play a lot more people. Well, it's tougher to get more people in the game. You know, we're trying to play three midfield lines. You know, it's tough to get that third midfield line in the game because the game's going from one end to the other and you can't get guys out because you got to play both ends of the field. So that's kind of been a little bit of a struggle to play more people. It's tougher to do, get people in and out of the game. So that's one of the tough parts about the new rules. But I love them. I think our players love them. I'd love to see a visible shot clock just go 60 seconds. I think that'd be a lot easier on the officials and a lot easier on coaches to know what's going on. And you just got the 60 seconds, but I think that will come in time.
You guys carry a pretty deep roster. You mentioned how it's harder to get guys onto the field. And that's actually almost seems I've heard before that some coaches are talking about how they need to make sure their second and third midfields are
more maybe prepared or ready game plan wise because those guys may get stuck on the field more often, may have to suddenly expand their abilities. Have you noticed that, or have you maybe had that a point of emphasis in preparation to make sure all three midi lines know all different sets?
Well, we always, you know, the thing we tell our second and third midfield lines is that your job is to have the best yield on the team. You know, we have a first midfield line that we're going to allow to take more chances and get up and down the field, but when you get on the field, you're a one turnover midfield. That's all you're allowed per game. You guys got to understand that when you're on the field, your plus minus ratio should be plus two, plus three. You're not giving up goals. You're controlling the pace of the game, resting our first midfield, and that's your job. Your job's not to score us a lot of goals. Your job's to maintain the game, kind of go about making sure that we're getting the possession time we need so we can rest our defense, rest our first midfield line, and then get out. You know, if you guys score goals, that's a bonus for us. But your job's to right in there, maintain possession, wear down the other team's defense a little bit so we can get other guys going. And if you can do that, you'll be very successful. And I think our second midfield line this year and our third midfield line this year in the first game did a tremendous job of that. You know, just maintaining the game, working it, and making sure that you're not giving over turnovers and not giving up goals. And so that's kind of how we go about it. Those guys have embraced that attitude. You know, we give out awards for best plus minus in practice during the week, the guys who have that, to make them understand how valuable it is with that kind of a hockey mentality. And that works well for us. And so you do have to make sure all your guys know something, because the biggest thing is you're never going to know when you're going to be put in a situation to win a game. Like last year, for example, Brian Badalato, when we were playing Tufts, Brian was the fifth attackman for us. He got had to play for a few injuries, and he scored the biggest goal of that game. You know, with 1 second left, end of half, he gets a chance, gets in the game, scores that goal. Brian didn't play very much the rest of the year, but he probably scored one of the biggest goals of the year for us because he was thrust into a spot to make a play. And those are these guys got to understand and prepare themselves, is that you're going to be put in a spot sometime over the season where you're going to help us win some games. And you have to be ready for that. You can't just go in and go, well, I haven't played a lot, coach, I can't make that play. You got to be ready to make the play. And that's, we prepare them in practice that way. You know, we think every play leads to another thing. You miss pass leads to a goal. Miss ground ball leads, if you pick it up, that never happens. You know, so we really emphasize on them, you know, every play matters.
So kind of jump back into the news, more stuff, I guess. We talked about the CAC and then the conference change. So kind of can you explain that? Maybe what prompted the move from CAC to with conference changes being the omnipresent college sports now and so many factors going in, doesn't seem to be lacrosse tends to push
Our buyout wasn't $40 million. So, but no, I think the biggest thing with the conference change is that the Capital Athletic Conference is a great conference, but it's a school mixture of public school and private schools, and size-wise, from like Salisbury being close to 9,000 to, you know, where I think Mary Washington's like, you know, 1,600 or 1,500. So it's really doesn't really have any kind of geographical area or size-wise thing. So Stevenson wanted, as a whole and as a school, wanted all their teams in one conference and schools that are like them. The MAC conference is like that. They're all private schools, all about our size, all have the same academic qualities. So that was more of a move that way rather than competition-wise. And it is a great school. A great conference for competition. Their basketball is very good. Their football is very good. Or, you know, volleyball is good. The soccer Messiahs are very good. So there's some great teams in there and some great competition. And for us, you know, I think we can help the lacrosse side. You know, I think they got some good teams in Messiah and Widener. They're doing a great job, and I think we can help boost that to be a better thing. And even though we'll miss our rivalries with St. Mary's and we're still playing Salisbury and Mary Wash, I think it's a better move for the school overall and all of our athletic teams. So we kind of had to sacrifice a little bit, maybe competition-wise, but I think top to bottom, the MAC lacrosse-wise, could be a little more competitive than the CAC just because the teams are all a little more consistent from top to bottom, where the Capitals more top-heavy.
But it was, I guess, a kind of athletic department consensus move, wasn't necessarily steered by one team.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's a president-driven, the MAC's a president-driven league, where the CAC is more athletic-driven. So the presidents really kind of dictate all the regulations and everything. So I think that's a better move for our school, and it's more of a university-driven thing. All the teams kind of agreed, and the coaches all agreed. You know, that'd be a better move for the school as a whole.
All right. Well, part of the reason we're talking to you today is so our intrepid reporter Ty Zanders did a nice piece about you guys in our March issue of the magazine. And, you know, he was talking about kind of the history of building up this program. You know, as we said before, you're entering your ninth year here. You started back in 2004, and from what we hear is that you started with 17 players.
Yeah, my first
school named Villa Julie.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, when I first left the University of Maryland, Coach Seaman made me aware of this opportunity, and I came down and interviewed and, you know, met with the athletic director and the CFO, and then I met with President Manning, and just thought it was a good try. You know, I think they were trying to do something good. And my first meeting I had there, I had 17 kids there. That was a little unique. And I think most of them were just playing lacrosse because we had a team. You know, I don't think any of them were trying to be better, except one kid, Brooks Beatty, at that time, who really wanted to be great. But the other kids were just kind of there. And so we struggled a little bit. You know, I had to go recruit about 13 kids mid-year from junior college and stuff like that. So we ended up having at least our first team, we had about 30. So luckily enough. And from there, you know, our first practice field was a slanted practice field with rocks. You know, we didn't have any of this great things we were overlooking now. So so it was quite an adventure. You know, we had to do a lot of things just to put games on, and we had to do a lot of things to kind of make the school understand, the athletic department understand how to put on events. You know, you just didn't go out there and have one person overseeing it. You know, you had to make sure that you had people overseeing the game. You had to have managers. You had to have, you know, benches. You know, you had to have all these little things and people and SIDs overlooking the game. We had to broadcast them. So we did a lot of things in order to pull off some games during that time. And it's been a unique, we'd probably write a really good book, you know, some of the things that we had to do. So you had to have a team on, you know, putting tarps on the field at times, taking them off 5 minutes before games. And, you know, it was a lot of crazy stuff. And, you know, we had to put a lot of smoke and mirrors, I like to say, you know, putting up bleachers, making a lot of banners to cover up things to kind of make it look a lot better than it was. But I think those days have really kind of shaped who we are now, because we really understand how far we've come and how lucky we are to have what we have. And I think those days really kind of make you look twice at how great, you know, we have it nowadays, where beforehand it was like just a struggle just to get a game going. It was crazy. But, you know, it's been a fun ride. And now in the turn to Stevenson and what we've done now, and I think I would never turn this experience for anything. You know, this is a great place with great people, and what I've learned in my 9 years here, I could never get out of Maryland or a Hopkins or anything like that.
I say, does David almost feel slightly surreal now? I mean, you started 17 players, a crooked practice field. Right now we're sitting in this gorgeous new stadium. You probably have, you know, a roster almost 40, 50 deep. You've produced 32 All-Americans in those 9 years.
Yep.
I mean, just...
It's a little crazy to think what we've accomplished here. You know, it's been a lot of fun, though. If you sit back and you think about what the things we've done, I think it's been worth it all. You know, I mean, everything we've done, the hard work people have put in to make this program to where it is now, it is pretty incredible that we're sitting here in this stadium. Because then when I first got here, I thought I'd be at Villa Julie at the time for about 6 weeks. You know, I was like, man, this is a tough road to hoe. But what we've gone now to where we are now, I think it's a tremendous thing. I like to say it's a little miracle. I mean, I don't think this situation would have worked anywhere else. We just had a lot of things kind of fall into place to create who we are now.
You know, we mentioned the old name Villa Julie. When was the switch to Stevenson, and what prompted that?
I think it happened about 4 years ago, I'd say the timeline is. And I think the thing that prompts it most is that a lot of people had a built-in culture, especially in Maryland, had, you know, preconceived notions of what Villa Julie College was. They thought it was a girls' school, thought it was a commuter school, thought it was a Catholic school, and it was none of those things. And sometimes when you just have those preconceived notions of what something is, and you bring kids on campus, they get tough to get that out of their head. And for the school to go from just a school in the state of Maryland to become more regional school, I think the board of directors and President Manning came to the conclusion we had to change the name to get more of a regional drawing. And that's really worked. You know, now people don't even know that we're Villa Julie College. You know, they just referred to us as Stevens. So the thing, that name change thing kind of happened overnight. And now we got kids on our team from 14 different states. You know, before we only had it, before that name change, probably had it from 3 different states. So I think the name change has been tremendously beneficial to the school and in our program.
You know, you've been here for 9 years. As the program has grown, can you think of, have there been particular moments, you know, banner wins or just events of those?
Well, there's some great events that we've had. You know, like when the first time we did something big is that, you know, when you played in Raven Stadium in between a couple Division I games, where I had to sell like 2,000 tickets and do all these things. I told Ty about this as well. We got our butts beat in. I mean, we got killed by Cabrini 15-5, but I think a lot of people saw they were willing to take some chances to win games, willing to do some big things, and I think it gave the program a lot of credibility doing that. And so that was one of the events. I think another thing is that when we beat Cortland here when they're defending national champs, you know, we came here and beat them when they were number 3 in the country in our first game of the year, and I think we beat them 13-12 and that was a huge win for us. I think that really kind of another thing that kind of catapulted us to the next level and gave us a lot of legitimacy. So those are two of the big events I think that really helped us kind of take it to the next level. And then we started able to compete with teams and get better, and I think everybody kind of respected us more. And I think also there's another set of games actually where we actually played, my second year, we played Lynchburg down at their place. We lost to them in double overtime. I think it was like 15-14. Then we went to went to California, played Whittier and lost by 6, and then we come back and play the number 5 team in the country and lose to them by 2. So, you know, we were starting to compete, we just couldn't do it on a consistent basis. So when the big games come, so a lot of those wins, you know, those losses, I think, actually turned us into who we are today. You know, we think we understand how to play hard and do things. So those are great times and great memories, but I'm glad we're winning a lot more games now than we did then.
You talk about how part of the rebranding of Stevenson helped kind of the Maryland community learn the school a little differently than maybe the preconceived notions of what Billy Julie was.
Right.
How important is it, or how useful in building this program has it been to kind of take advantage of, you know, we're sitting here in Owing Mills, we're in part of what people would consider, you know, the heart of a hotbed of the lacrosse area, the traditions around here, the schools. You've seem to be doing better and better, pulling more kids from local programs and kind of beefing up the program that way.
I think it helped us a lot in the recruiting aspect, especially for the local MIA schools. You know, we get a lot of kids from those schools now, but I think it's helped us a lot in transferring wise, where kids that originally like, well, no, coach, I want to go away, it's too close, and they go away, then sometimes the grass isn't as green as it hoped has been for them, and then we get those guys in the rebound, like Parker Bratton, who's one of our starting defensemen. His McDonough kid went to St. John's, just didn't go as well for him there, transferred here. You know, Kyle Howlcheck, a Loyola kid who went to Lehigh first, didn't really work out for him, came back. You know, we had a kid named Chris Baldwin early in our days who went to Navy, didn't work out for him. So that those local kids that went away at first, we give them a good home to come back to and another chance to play at a high level at a good school that cares about them, and they get to play some good lacrosse. So I think the whole marketing that we do, you know, we did a lot of YouTube videos early on when you get better. We did a lot, you know, a lot of Twitter and a lot of the stuff that got our name out there. People saw the videos. Oh, this is a pretty cool place. It's, you know, so they have good players. So I think that all that stuff, that marketing that we did, all helped us. People know about us quicker than if we did nothing. You know, so it really gave us a little better thing. I should probably say through a bit wider net than we usually would have had out there because of all that stuff.
And, you know, in terms of all these ideas of the program maturing and all, a lot was made of kind of the class 2011 that left.
Yeah.
That left. You guys had, I think, 8 All-Americans in there. You know, Jimmy Daly, Neil Barthelme, Kyle Moffitt, Ray Whitty, Richie Ford, Kyle Menendez.
I'll take all those guys right now.
Sean Calabuzzi. and you know, I didn't get to go to the quarterfinal game you guys wound up losing to Roanoke, but I heard it was kind of an emotional press conference. So you kind of recognized that these were guys who helped buy in maybe a little young and help raise the boat of the program.
I think when you build a program, you always have a set of kids that, you know, start the journey. You know, and Jimmy and all those guys started this journey for us. You know, they made us what we are today. They made our core values. They made who we the school, who it is. They put us on the map. You know, they're the ones that went out and did this, and they invested so much of their personal time and their life to making this program great that, you know, it is tough when you let those guys go. And that was really, we lost to Roanoke, unfortunately, in that game. And Roanoke played great. But when you, after it comes to such a sudden end, and you have, you know, all these great players that built your program, it's really tough to say goodbye to them. And, you know, and that's why it was so tough, because they were the forefathers of this program. They always will be, and we'll remember that, because those guys gave so much, it meant so much to them. And you know, when you get guys that have that kind of commitment to a program, it really makes it something special. And even though we didn't win that game, we didn't win any championships, you know, that's going to be a special class in Stevenson history no matter what, because of who they were. You know, Jimmy, and you know, you got guys like Ray Whitty, Kyle Moffitt. You know, Kyle Moffitt's high school team didn't even have a goalie. You know, he didn't even, you know, the kid didn't even score, and he scored 10 career goals as a freshman and sophomore, and he scored 45 as a junior and 40 as a senior. You know, Ray Whitty, you know, he was going to a junior college. Nobody even knew about it. I called Ray because they saw him at my face-off camp. Ray, why don't you come? You know, we'd love to have you. He came, turned out to be one of the best face-off guys in Division III history, I think. Did a great job. Jimmy, he didn't get recruited by anybody. Evan Douglas, you know, it was Austin Nazareth. You know, Evan turned out to be the defenseman of the year. You know, so we, you know, Neil Barthelme transferred in. You know, we got Richie Ford, you know, was able to get him a 6-year. He's a 4-time All-American here. We had Steve Casimir, who went to Onondaga Community College and, you know, didn't play for 2 years, but I still recruited him and got Steve here. And so we got all these guys that really believed in what we can build here, and then they took the dream and made it reality. And so that's why they were so special to us, and we'll always remember that.
You know, the longer you're out of school, the more you deal kind of with alumni and stuff as they come through. How's that part of the building process been of now? You you're jettisoning these great players out of the college program now. I mean, keeping up alumni relations, having guys like this come back through, playing in your alumni game, all those kind of things.
And our alumni team's great now. It's an excellent team. These guys got like Mike Simon, who's one of the best Poles in the country, playing for the BayHawks and on the USC national team. It makes it a pretty good alumni game. But our alumni is really getting better. You know, we've only had lacrosse here for like 15 years. So, you know, we're competing against programs that have 50, 60, 70 years of tradition. You know, they got all these alumni. I'm older than all our alumni. There's not an alumni older than me. So it makes it kind of tough when you're growing alumni relations to do that. But I think we have a guy named Mike Tyler who's running our alumni group now, getting the guys together. And each year it's going to get a little bit better. In 10 years, we're going to have a fantastic alumni. It's just going to take a little while. They're not making any money yet. They're just getting their life started. You know, so, but they're into it. They come to a lot of the games. We saw a lot of them at our kickoff banquet this past Friday. So they really want us to do well. And I think in the end, in a couple years, when everybody's doing well, we're going to have a great alumni group. But they're always here. They're always stopping by. They're always talking to the guys. And Jimmy is still active. Richie, they still talk. Steve Casimir works at the university here, so he talks to the guys a lot. So it's good to have those guys around just to tell the guys, hey, this is what we went through, and now it's your turn to take over.
Part of, I guess, what allows you to bring in all these great players or these guys to, you know, mature into these great players and put up some of the gaudy numbers they have is the very fast up and down kind of style you guys play. How would you describe the way Stevenson plays lacrosse?
Well, we like to kind of call it organized chaos. You know, so it seems like everything's going crazy out there, but there's an organization to it. And we play a true motion offense, which means that the offense changes by the pass, you know, depending on what people are doing. And I think guys love to play that way. We let players make plays and to do things within our rules, and we let our defensemen play. You know, we don't tell them to go out there and pressure guys. Be smart about it within the team concept, but go out and make plays. And if you're put in a position to make a play, you got to make it. Where some other places might tell you, hey, we got to slow down, we need to get the ball around, everybody needs to touch it, or hey, we got to get in tight, play tight defense. You know, we want our players to be players, and that's why we're recruiting them. That's why we want to go out. That's why I think a lot of our games are really exciting, because our kids are going out making plays, and sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. That leads to other teams making great plays. we're committed to that style. I think kids love it, and we teach kids how to play the game of lacrosse instead of teaching kids how to make plays. You know, a lot of times you go to programs and you got to run play one, you got to run play two, you got to run play three. You know, we hardly call any plays. You know, we have our kids run and play the game of lacrosse and go out there and teach them how to do that. So I think that's a great way to play. I think kids love to do that. It's probably the reason we've had so many great attackmen, because they get the play. We tell our attackmen to go to the goal, make plays. You know, we tell middies go to the goal and make plays. You know, so I think that's a great way to play, and we're committed to it. I think Tim Paulson, who is our defensive coordinator, also is an innovator how to play defense. A lot of the things that we do creative defensively, I think let our defensemen be great with their skill set. You know, not all defensemen can do everything. So we have a lot of guys that can do different things, and we put them in situations to be successful, I think.
Are there target numbers you try and hit with any of that? I mean, your 2011 team, you know, scored nearly 17 goals a game, shot nearly 61 shots a game. I mean, do you try and track?
No, we don't. But we never tell a kid not to shoot the ball either. You know, we don't go into a practice and go, we need to shoot 60 times. You know, we never do that. You know, we just go into practice, or we go into a game, we want to get good shots, and that's all we care about. So we don't have any target goals, or we don't want to score 16 goals a game. We want to score one more than our opponent, really, so we can win the game. But I think the style of play just kind of breeds big numbers. You know, we encourage our kids to be aggressive. You know, get out there, go to the goal, make plays. You know, if they slide, throw it forward, throw it back. You know, read the situation. So, but we never go in going, hey, we need 50 shots, or we need, you know, 18 goals. You know, we just go in and play. And then if we get 18 goals, we get 18 goals. If we get 75 shots, like we took against Tufts 2 years ago, we get 75 shots. But we're going to play to win the game. And if you think that pressure that we put on teams throughout a course of a game wears teams down. You know, if you're always attacking, you're always aggressive, it's tough for defenses to be great for 60 minutes. They can be great for 30 minutes, but over 60 minutes, I think that pressure does a lot. And it's tough if you're chasing a team around for 60 minutes on defense. They're going to break down. They're going to get tired. They're going to do things. So we feel that pressure we put on teams a lot of times, you know, helps them break down, because they have to be great all the time. It's tough to be great all the time.
You know, you talk about calling the, I guess, style organized chaos, and I've been to a couple of your practices. I mean, you definitely get that feel, particularly in some of the drills where it's just up and down, up and down, up and down.
Right,
I mean, can you talk about what kind of things are you doing in practice? I mean, how are you maybe designing a practice or drills or just certain ideas you're trying to emphasize that you cultivate those ideas?
Well, our practices are generated for a fast-paced style. You know, we want to get up and down. We want the kids to run. I think if you can get your kids in shape through practice without running them hard, hard at the end, that's a good thing too. You know, so we kind of do all these things, but we want the kids to learn how to play the game through the course of our practices, how we do it. And that's why we run so many full field transition drills. So kids have to get in, they have to understand situations. They have to, you know, this is a break, this is not a break. You know, I have to get in the hole or I have to throw it down the side. So we run all these things so kids are learning the game of lacrosse all the time. There's not a lot of standing around, so kids aren't standing around wondering, talking to their buddies about their girlfriend or anything. They have to pay attention. They got to get into the next drill. They got to be active. They got to be aggressive. You know, we never take water breaks. If the kids need a water, go and get water. I don't think I have to tell an 18 to 25-year-old kid that needs water. You know what I mean? You know, we tell our coaches, you got to talk to a kid, and we're not going to stop the drill. Pull them to the side, tell them what to do, and then get them back in the drill. You know, we don't want to stop all these things. We want our kids to get going. We want to play. I think the kids have a lot of fun. You've been to our practices, as you've been. You know, our guys hoop and holler. They enjoy practice. They, you know, they're not sitting there. It's not a quiet practice. We play music. You know, we want them to enjoy the game of lacrosse. Where a lot of times, I think sometimes kids, it's a long season. If you're beating them up early and they're not having any fun, it's going to be a long year. We want our kids to enjoy practice. We want them to get out there, have a lot of fun, feel free to express themselves, and to learn. And I learn as much from them as they do for me. Because I ask them, what's going on out there? Okay, let's figure it out. You know, this is what we need to do. We got to change. You know, okay, we can't run a regular break. We got to run a different type of break, or we got to run a different offense. We're learning all these things on the fly, and that's what it is. So it's more of a learning type practice that I would call it. It's a fast-paced, fun style, but we're learning all the time.
You talk about, from being at practice, I noticed that there is a lot of hoop and hollering. There's not necessarily a lot of yelling, admonition, you know, kind of beating up a kid for stuff. Right. You talk about having that fast style play. Part of that is, you know, a little bit of taking chances, of having kids go out and make plays. I guess is part of running a style like that needing to be a little bit more of that, I don't know if forgiveness is the right
Well, you got to understand.
You
like
can't
I
be a coach that's no. shouting at a kid, right. oh, you
well,
screwed that pass
Well, I
up
tell my assistant coach, Tim Paulus, this all the time, and he drives him nuts because he's a defensive coordinator. It's like when he had like guys, like say, for example, he had Richie Ford. Richie Ford dodges four guys and sticks it in the back of the net. You go up to him and say, great job, Richie. You know, great goal. And then, but if he does it again and gets it taken away from him, you scream at him and holler at him. You can't have it both ways, you know. You're going to trust your kids to make plays. You're going to have to live and die with some of the things they do, and you're giving them permission to do that, and that's the way it is. You know what I mean? You got to understand that if we're going to be pressure defense, we got to trust our defensemen. They can guard guys on the perimeter. You know, we can't yell at them to get run by, you know, because what we want to play. So there's a little bit of learn and take and understanding that, but I think it's more time, place, situation that we really try to teach our guys. When's it all right to do something? When's it not all right to do something? Understand the score. Understand where we are in the game. If you can do that. If we don't have the ball all day and, you know, a kid runs through five guys and gets a taken, that's a bad play. But if it's an up and down game and you know you run through five guys, we're going to get it back in 20 seconds, that's fine. You know, we can live with that. But you got to understand the pace of the situation. We get a ball taken away, the defenseman misses a ground ball or he takes it from somebody and then he tries it again and misses it, you know, hopefully his teammates are going to bail him out. You know, we're trusting that our team concept's going to help. So I think it's a great way to play. You know, we will yell at guys. Don't get me wrong. We're not always, we don't yell at them, you know, but I think at the same time our guys understand, you know, that they make a mistake, they're not always going to yell that. They understand what we're trying to teach them. And that's good. That's a good way, great way to play. You know, I think that's a fun way to play when you know you can make a play and try things and not get yelled at. I think our guys understand that.
You know, people may describe that, and I think Jimmy Daly's even quoted in Ty's article as describing you as a player's coach. What maybe does that term mean to you, and do you think that may be a fair assessment?
Well, I don't really know what a kind of a player's coach means, what they say. Obviously, I think a player's coach is that, what I think a player's coach is that they care about their players. You know, I care about my players, not only on the field, but off the field. You know, what help do they need academically, personally, you know, family issues. We're here for our players all the time, and I think that's what I mean by a player coach. This, not only on the field stuff, we care about them all the time, what they're always doing. And as a player's coach, I think that Jimmy might mean is that I was harder on Jimmy than anybody, and he knows it because Jimmy was the quarterback of our team. Every decision Jimmy made affected our whole team, and he knew that. But I think Jimmy understood what I wanted, you know, the intensity that I brought. He loved that intensity. He loved that competition every day in practice to push him to be a better player every day. That's what we want our guys to do, be better every day. And I think our guys appreciate that, whereas some places, you know, coaches may not talk to their other players as much. They might think, we talk to all our guys. We want them all to be great. We try not to play favorites. You know, you're the best player, you play. But, you know, do that. But, you know, I think we just care about our kids. And I think if the players know you care about them, they're going to play a whole lot better. And that's the biggest thing. And we really care about them and want them to be better people. And in the end, in 4 years, they're better people. No matter how many games they win or lose, you know, we've done our job.
You mentioned Tim, your defensive coordinator. Can you talk about the staff you've built here? You know, are you looking at certain guys in particular?
Well, you know, the good thing about having a good team, I think, is that consistency within the staff. You know, you're not always replacing coaches. And me and Tim have been together for 9 years. He's been just as responsible for our success as anybody. You know, just with his recruiting and his outside-the-box ideas on the defense and how hard he works and our inner competition during practice. You know, I'm the offensive guy. He's the defensive guy. So sometimes me and him are getting after each other in practice. The other guys kind of like that. You know, they kind of chime in, and that breeds better competition in practice because, you know, going after each other a little bit. So if the defense is beating up the offense, I'm getting a little upset. And the offense is beating up the defense, he's getting upset. So that inner competition works really well. We're able to have Greg Firstman, who played for us for 3 years. He's been my face-off coach here for the last 3 years. So he's been with me 6 out of my 9 years. I think that helps. You know, we've added on Ben Burquest for the last 3 years, who's the assistant at Towson High School, who's been a great addition to our staff and has really helped us out. And he's really great with the players, kind of like when I'm seeing the bigger picture of the offense and everything, he's able to help them with the smaller individual pieces, which really helps me players develop. And, hey, look at this, or do this, or, hey, just relax. You know, kind of the mental aspect does a great job with that. So that works really well. We always have a couple of players who are graduating help out. This year is no different than that. Ian Ballin is going to be a psychologist, which is a little crazy for a goalie saying he's going to be a psychologist. So he's getting a couple classes done and everything. So he's helping out with the goalies again this year. And we've added Kevin Slavkowski for 3 years. He did such a great job with us. But it's been a kind of a seamless transition because we hired Adam Sear, who's another Maryland kid who is like kind of best friends with Kevin. So there's really been no change there. And Adam's done a great job helping us out. So we kind of went from a staff of, you know, 10, you know, and then I kind of shrank it a little bit this year. So we're about six people. So I think that's helped us a little bit more. So we're a little more focused on the kids. Sometimes you have a bigger staff, all your coaches do is talk to each other about everything else, and they don't coach. So that's kind of the negative of having a big staff. So we've kind of shrunk our staff down to about 6, and I think it's actually been a lot more successful, especially last year and this year, because it lets us coach the kids a little bit more. There's not as much outside interference.
You know, typically the job of recruiting falls to the assistants of the Division I program tend to carry a little bit more of that load. How is that power dynamic or responsibility dynamic, I guess, in the Division III program? Are your assistants doing the majority of recruiting?
Well, I think we all do it. You know, I think we're pretty aggressive with our recruiting in general, but we want to see everybody. I particularly want to see everybody we recruit, so I have a great idea about what they're capable of and if we're bringing the right kind of kid in. It's really tough to do it alone, but Tim and Adam have done a great job getting out and seeing everybody, and then we try to get all the kids we've seen. We want to recruit, get them on campus for an unofficial visit with their parents, then we want to get them on campus with an official visit, but we all do the work. I make the majority of the calls of the kids we really want. Tim and Adam also make calls, but in the end, you know, we really want the kid. I'm making most of the calls for that inner, you know, feeling of that is this going to be a good fit for us or not. You know, we've told lots of kids, no, that's not a good fit. You don't think you're going to fit in with our guys, but we just want kids that want to be here to play lacrosse and be good students, be good people. I think we're done with the kids that want to come play lacrosse and have a great time. Those kids cost us a lot more problems. So, you know, I think our recruiting, we've done a really good job of getting to that point, bringing quality kids on campus, kids that want to be great and understand what it takes to be great. Because sometimes kids don't understand there's so many Saturday nights in your life. If you screw up one in college, you might ruin yourself for the rest of your career. Save that for when you're done, you know, when you're after college. Because if you screw your teammates when you're in college, they're not going to be very good friends when you leave college. If you're good people with them in college, you're going to ask them to be there to help you when you get married or you have kids or things don't go as well. You're going to be there for them during that time. And I think that's important for our guys to understand now. So type of kids we want, and that's what our recruiting's gone to get those type of kids. So we're a little more fickle nowadays, but everybody chips in. We like to recruit the nation. We want kids from all over the country. That's why we have kids from 14 different states on our team. We want that. We don't want kids from all from one area, and we just want the best kids. We can get the best kids, you know, we're happy with that, and tough-nosed kids mentally that want to be great. You know, those are what we look for, and if we can get enough of those kids, and we think we can be successful then a year.
Have you seen that dynamic change in your 9 years of, you know, maybe early on you had to go out and sell the program a little bit more, whereas now people know Stevenson, they know you, how good you are, they know the schedule, you know, now maybe kids are coming to you more?
Absolutely. It was really tough to get anybody interested in us, you know what I mean, because we were nobody. We're a 6-10 team, Village Julie College, never really had any big wins, so it was really, really tough. And to now where, you know, kids come to, we'd be shocked at the number of sophomore letters we get, number of junior letters we get, number of senior letters. It's it's, I mean, it's out of control now how many kids are really interested in us, but that's a great thing. But early on, we used to have to take kids. Anybody interested wanted to come, we'd have to take those kids. But when you do that, it leads to problems. Some kids come with checkered backgrounds, they get in trouble more, cause you a lot more headaches. Now we're hopefully get more well-rounded kids, kids that understand what we're about, and that's really kind of helped us on both ends now. So it's a, but recruiting's a tough job. It's 24/7, 365 days a year. You're always looking at it. If you're not recruiting, you're not doing your job really, because you're always, and we tell our kids that all the time. You know, my job is basically to replace them every year. You know, find better kids every year. So you got to play better. You know, if you're the same player now that you are in a year, you're just not very good. You got to continue to develop, and I think we've done a good job with that recruiting. Like last year, you know, we had all those freshmen that came in and played, and after we lost that great class, you know, we're 18-5. And again, we hope this year all those kids are older. We brought another great class in. You know, we hope that we're getting a little bit better. We can maintain that level of play year in and year out. But it's all recruiting. You know, recruits make you a lot better coach.
Well, this might kind of put you on the spot. But, I mean, it, you know, if that's the idea, I mean, it, say I was a potential recruit, I mean, how, what would be maybe the pillars you would be trying to sell Stevenson?
Well, obviously, I think one of the things we sell is that, you know, I think Stevenson's a great academic school, but it's more of a blue-collar type school. And what I mean by blue-collar is hardworking, kids that are more career-oriented and looking to what they're going to do after college. It's not a great party school. You know, you think they're more career-oriented type kids. And so we want those blue-collar, tough-nosed kids that want to be successful on the field, but also are more career-oriented in the classroom and looking for what they're going to do afterwards. A lot of our kids have jobs. A lot of them get internships, do that. We have a smaller class sizes. None of our professors are on tenure, so they actually have to teach. And they do a great job meeting with our players, which is great. We don't have any classrooms of 100 or 200 people. You know, all the teachers know who our kids are. They have the interaction. So I think that interaction with them is tremendous. And then Dr. Ione, who's our director of academic support, does a great job meeting with all our kids and helping them out so they're successful in the classroom. So we give them that success they need to the tutors and the note takers and everything they're allowed to get through the Academic Resource Center or Academic Link, which is an award-winning tutoring program. And that really helps the kids out tremendously with that. So we give them that individual attention, we think. And then in the end, you get to play some great lacrosse in one of the best stadiums in the country, with some of the best fans and an athletic department that cares about them. And that's big. And I think the other part we kind of sell to them a little bit, which is completely true, is that we think we have the best president in the country. President Manning comes and he stands on our sidelines. He talks to our recruits. He meets them. He's like part of our team. And when you have a president that's invested in your program as he is, you know, I think that you, I think the parents feel like their kids are going to be taken care of. And that's the most important thing.
Do you have a sense, I guess, has he led you a sense of where maybe lacrosse is within the university hierarchy or academic?
Well, I think lacrosse is pretty big. You know, I think that's one of the bigger things in our, with him, that he wants lacrosse to be good. We're the forefront, I think, with the other programs. The first one to kind of get ranked, first one to be a top 10 team, first one to make an NCAA Final Four. You know, we set all these firsts for the department. And so I think lacrosse ranks right up there with the hierarchy of sports here. But I think, you know, we also help the other sports be better. You know, it'd be a good lacrosse team helps the women's volleyball team. It helps the men's soccer team. Hey, look, you got a great lacrosse team. We get a lot of publicity. Maybe some players have heard of us in other parts of the country. Oh, let me check Stevenson out. So the lacrosse team's pretty good. Let me check out their soccer program I played. Maybe I'll check that out. So I think it's helped all the other programs, and hopefully we're one of the, you know, the higher sports here. I like to think we are.
And you mentioned, you know, in the recruiting bit, you get to come, you get to play some great games, so we can, you know, wrap this up on looking at those great games. You guys are going to play Hampton-Sydney this weekend. You play RIT midweek. You know, I'm not going to be able to talk to you between the two games, so I can still kind of get you to ballpark both of them now, maybe particularly the Hampton-Sydney game. Yeah. Looking at, you know, Salisbury just lost to two ODAC teams. Looks like the ODAC is good every
year. It's going well. Yeah, well, you know, each year's lacrosse, you know, obviously Salisbury, they'll figure they'll be ready for us, I guarantee. They'll be much different by the time we play them. But, you know, we think we got a great schedule. You know, Hampton-Sydney's always a great game for us. They play us really tough. They got a good win over Mary Walsh, 9-8, so they're going to be excited and playing down in their stadium and the grass, and supposed to rain all day, so that's going to be a lot of fun down there. But then we play RIT, who's number four in the country, probably. The new polls come out. That's going to be great. Then we play Winnick, who's Western New England, who's going to be on Saturday, who's like a number 11 in the country. And then we play Roanoke, who's going to be itching at it after losing the St. Mary's. They'll be a top 20 team. And then we play Goucher, which is, you know, not a tough game. They'll probably be a top 20 team. And then we play Tufts. So, you know, we like to play all these big games, you know, so I think it's good for us. We're getting ready to do that, but we're going to have to be great every day in order to be successful. But I think we like that type of challenge, and our kids like it. And then we still got to add in Lynchburg and Salisbury and those type of teams later on in the year. So we still got a lot of big games to go.
So I guess with that idea, I mean, with so many games, so many, a lot of them being midweek, is it really about maybe game planning from opponent to opponent, or is it so a bit more about
making sure you do what you do well. This team knows its identity. It knows what it can do, and being able.
Yeah, well, we like. I mean, it's basically when you play like Division III is a lot different than Division I. You know, we play 17 games. You know, so we know we're playing a lot of Wednesday, Saturday. So, you know, basically it's about how you play. But we do scout every team. We have film in every team. We do a scouting report in every team. But I think, you know, those little adjustments you make per game to each game changes or big changes to help your team win those games. So those little nuances, how we change our offense a little bit or how we slide defensively, helps us each game. So we're really kind of tough to scout, for us to be scouted for each game, because we change so much for each game because of the way we run our offenses. But, you know, it's a tough go, but we like that style of play that we play. We think that, you know, it's tough for other teams to play when you don't know what the other team's always going to do. It's tough to scout that, or defensively you got to get ready for pressure and stuff. It's tough for other teams, but, you know, we're excited for the challenge, and we'll see how it goes.
All right, Coach. Well, thank you very much for talking to me today, and good luck when you make the long trip down to Hampton City this
Thanks.
Weekend.
I hope they bring good movies.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Paul Cantabene. In just 9 years, he's certainly built a powerhouse at Stevenson. For more Division III news, follow Inside Lacrosse online at www.insidelacrosse.com or on Twitter at @inside_lacrosse.